Blog Talk Radio.
Heavens. Call the Animal Protective League on us. Good evening. Welcome to Erie House. Oldy Tiny Radio. Hi, hi, Fogsbane. Ugga bugga. Boo boo ugga. And a stutterer. As we finish up our Writer's Block weekend, I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. Here along with...
Dave Binkley from Weird History Bad Movie and Spaceship One. We're getting ready to blast off with another episode very soon of Spaceship One. Hooray!
Yeah.
Watch your YouTubes and or my Facebook and or the Weirdness Really Bad Movie page. You'll be able to catch that. Yep, yep, yep.
Oh, yeah, and don't forget Tuesday on the Vortex.
Tuesday on the Vortex. I thought I'd save that for shameless plug.
Well, do it again.
Okay. Shameless plug right now, we'll be on Tuesday, 9 p.m. on the Vortex, and it should be our interesting little story that we're building around 12 Angry Men, and of course, we also have a Spaceship One episode with that as well. Woohoo!
Too cool! And tonight, we got some fun, too. Another episode of CBS Radio Mystery Theater to wrap up our Writer's Block, if you will, weekend.
Yeah, I you know what I want to say, I'm not going to say because it's be a spoiler alert. I don't like to do that, so I'm not going to. All I will say is this is another fine tale from the Mystery Theater, from the pen of actress writer Elspeth Eric.
Oh. Oh, we need need CW more than ever. She's kind of a well-read on the ladies of science fiction.
Yes. But so hers are always a little different twist. But again, you know, she's writing in a sense from a woman's perspective, which would make sense that she is a woman.
Yeah. Makes it a little easier. Well, maybe. Who knows? But nowadays. No, and who knows? Maybe CW will show up yet. If not, fear not. We have tons of radio, tons of features, and fun.
And a cat. And a cat. And a goat.
Yeah, Mighty Joe and the goat are with us tonight in the house. Erie House, that is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anybody in in our...
Well, the voice of God is there. Norman Rose, Don Scardino, Bryna Rayburn, very regular. Curiosity. I'm going to click on Bryna Rayburn just because... because I'm curious because she did quite a few. And I'm looking here. 216 episodes of the Mystery Theater. And... did a lot of old radio program, including Top Secret and 2000 Plus and many others.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, one of the shows we've got coming up for Weirdness Really Bad, she's going to be Jackie Gleason's sister in a story called The Laugh Maker, a drama with Jackie Gleason and Art Carney.
And we're accompanied by...
Greetings, Mr. Listeners. This is CW. Late, but always worth the wait.
Ooh.
Right. And
agreed.
And someone who needs no notes. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm here all week. And happy birthday of Halloween. 31 days of Halloween, as far as I'm concerned.
I like your approach.
Thank you.
Agreed.
yep.
But
it's the second most decorated holiday of the year. First most being Christmas, the second most being Halloween, believe it or not.
And it's nipping at the heels of St. Nicholas's holiday.
Yep.
I say...
I have no doubt. No doubt.
Go out into the streets and protest.
Burn, baby,
we've
burn.
Had enough of that. We've had enough of that in Akron lately. No, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll go. We'll back off on the fire right now.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
The burning. Kind of discourage that for a little while.
Just send a message to your congressman. Send a message to your congressman. That'll get the point across.
Yes.
Yeah.
Flood Washington with cyber messages of jack-o'-lanterns, goblins, ghouls, and ghosts.
Yep. No,
ghosts.
Ghosts.
Oh, ghosts. Oh, I thought you said ghosts.
Ghosts.
I thought you said ghosts.
Yeah, no. Poor little creature. Dave's going to get the ASPCA on us. I know it.
Yes. But
anybody of note in our feature tonight, Dave?
Just going over that. We were just going over, let me go back, Don Scardino, Norman Rose, the voice of God, Brian Rayburn, and Pinnock, I guess, and written by Elspeth Eric.
Ah.
Somebody's going through a tunnel there.
Yep. Duck! Under the tunnel. Anyhow. It's a good one, and it's another story about writers. It's called The Imposter.
Like I said, there's some things I'm really chomping at the bit to say, but I don't want to be a spoiler of these mystery theaters. This is one that you don't want to ruin the spoiler on this one.
All right. So we won't have too much of a preview, but it'll be well worth the listen. And we might as well get on part one of The Imposter from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Episode number...
521th, and it is from March 22nd of 1977.
Go, please.
Oh, go. I'm sorry.
Let's all sing, gang.
This is my favorite song.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. Next time you go to the theater to see a new play, ask the person sitting next to you who wrote it. Chances are he won't know. Oh, he'll know who's starring in it, and probably he'll know what the critics had to say about it. But it will take a furtive glance at his program before he can tell you the name of the playwright. Yet, weeks, months, and even years earlier, there was a playwright, patiently, stubbornly putting words on paper. As the old theatrical saying goes, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
Nobody's going to believe this.
I know.
I don't believe it myself.
And neither do I.
But it happened, didn't it?
Our mystery drama, The Impostor, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Elspeth Eric and stars Don Scardino and Norman Rose. It is sponsored in part by X-Lax and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One. A playwright loses hegemony over his work as soon as a producer buys his play. The producer hires actors, a director, a designer, a manager, and the playwright, who started the whole thing, becomes a pallid spectator to the feverish activity which begins both in the theater and in the producer's office. It is in just such an office that our story begins.
If you don't believe what I'm about to tell you, don't blame me. I have trouble believing it myself. I'm Ted Harris. I'm assistant to the incredibly successful Broadway producer, Norman Gelb. Years ago, when I first went to work for him, I was sitting in my office right next to Norman's when I heard his voice raised to an unaccustomed pitch.
It's impossible. It's absolutely impossible. Mrs. Mahaffey, it can't be done. We open tonight. Your play opens tonight. Mrs. Mahaffey, there isn't a printer in town who could do it. I'm telling you that... Now, come on in, Ted. Mrs. Mahaffey, you have written a great play. It's going to be a big hit. Don't you understand? No, I can't do this one little thing for you. Because it's impossible, and it's crazy.
What's up, Norman?
Oh, come on in. Sit down.
I take it that was Mrs. Mahaffey on the phone.
Our marvelous playwright, our genius, our pain in the neck.
What's it all about?
Ted, you are not going to believe this.
Mrs. Mahaffey acting up all of a sudden?
Acting up? She's lost her marbles.
She's such a nice lady.
Mrs. K. Mahaffey, whom we all adore and revere. Mrs. K. Mahaffey, who has written the best play any producer ever got his grubby hands on. The best play since
Norman, just tell me. What does the lady want?
Oh, Ted, you are not going to believe it.
What is it?
She wants her name taken off of the play.
She what?
I told you wouldn't believe it.
I don't.
Ted, there has never been a production like this. I don't mean just the script, though Lord knows that's a masterpiece. But I have hired the best people, the best actors, the best director, the best designer, mm-hmm. because I love this play. It's in my blood. It's part of me. Do you know that every day since I read it, I have gone around thanking whatever star looked out for Norman Gelb that this play came into my office? And you know how it got here?
Through the mail.
No agent, no nothing. From a playwright nobody ever heard of. You know, I darn near didn't read it.
Yeah, you had me read it.
Huh? Oh, yeah, that's right. I did, didn't I? And you liked it.
I liked it a lot.
And then I read it and liked it even better than you did. Couldn't wait to get on the phone and buy it. You remember that?
I remember.
Naturally, Mrs. K. Mahaffey was very happy, very grateful. And who wouldn't be? Norman Gelb is not one of your schlock producers.
Ah, far from it.
When she came in, Ted, to sign the contracts, I thought, my, what a nice, reasonable lady. So normal, I thought. Very calm, very poised, very sweet, very nice. But I didn't take advantage of her.
Mm-mm.
Or the fact that this was her first time out. I gave her good terms because I knew that she had written a great play.
Mm-hmm.
Though I remember thinking at the time, how could such a great play come out of such a normal lady? Now it turns out she's not such a normal lady. You just never know about these things, do you?
Never.
You know that she's a translator at the United Nations. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, she translates from German into English. Been doing it ever since her husband died about 10 years ago. Never wrote a thing in her life. Not even an article, let alone a play. Imagine. The most intricate, the most exacting form of literary composition there is, and she writes one. A good one. Good. It's a great one.
Fantastic.
Ted, do you know what I have done for this little lady?
A lot.
No. This is something special. A surprise for tonight. I put her name up on the marquee. Ted, you know that's never been done for an unknown playwright. I want to show her how we believe in her, in her play.
I want her to come to the theater tonight and look up at the marquee and see her name spelled out in lights. I want to see her face when she sees it. And now she wants new programs printed up without her name.
Well, do you think it's first night nerves or what?
I don't know. Good Lord, Ted, we go up in 4 hours. How can I get new programs printed up in 4 hours?
Well, you can't.
Oh, Ted, she's hysterical. Do me a favor. Go up to her place and talk to her. Make her see it is impossible. Will you do that for me?
Oh, I don't know, Norman.
Please, Ted.
What'll I say?
You'll think of something.
I hope so.
Sure you will. She likes you. You'll think of something.
What name does she want you to put on the programs, or do you just say by anonymous?
She wants me to substitute another name.
Any other name?
No. She was very specific about the name.
What was it?
Vervain. Martin Vervain.
All the way up to Mrs. Mahaffey's apartment building, I tried to think what I could possibly say to this nice, unassuming woman who had suddenly, seemingly, gone slightly mad. I didn't know her awfully well. Most of her contacts had been with Norman. But she and I had always gotten along. When I got to the apartment, I waited a moment and then pushed the button. It was at least a full minute before the door opened, and when it did, it wasn't Mrs. Mahaffey. It was a dumpy little woman I'd seen around the theater a few times.
Yes.
Is Mrs. Mahaffey in?
Oh, well, I'm afraid she isn't seeing anyone right now.
Oh, well, maybe she'd see me.
Mrs. Mahaffey's play is opening tonight on Broadway.
Yeah, I know. I work for Mr. Gelb, the producer. I'm Ted Harris. Mr. Gelb asked me to come up here and talk to her.
Oh. Well, in that case, come on in. She might see you if it's about the play. I'm Dorothy Dillingham. I'm a friend of Kay's. Actually, Kay wrote the play at my house. I have a little place up in the Catskills.
Oh, is that so?
Oh, yes. Well, we're very close, Kay and I, both being widows. My husband and hers died the same year, within a few months of each other.
I've done all I could. I can't do anymore. They won't listen to me. Nobody will listen. Nobody understands. I've tried, but it's no use. No use.
That's Kay.
She sounds very upset.
She's been upset ever since the road tour.
Mr. Gelb says she wants her name taken off the program.
She does. She's quite determined.
Well, doesn't she know that that's impossible?
Well, if she does, it doesn't make any difference.
But we open tonight, Mrs. Dillingham. Less than 4 hours from now.
I know.
Mr. Gelb said she wanted another name substituted.
Martin Vervain.
You know about that?
Oh, yes.
Mrs. Dillingham, on the way over here, it occurred to me, does Mrs. Mahaffey think that a man's name would be better for some reason? Because if that's what she thinks, those days are past. It might have been true once. I guess it was. But these days, a woman's name is as good as a man's. Maybe better.
I know.
Well, then why would she...
Have you done it?
Oh, Kay, dear.
Mrs. Mahaffey...
Have you done it? That's all I want to know, so that I can get some rest. Have you done it, Mr. Harris? Have you removed my name?
Mrs. Mahaffey, we open in less than 4 hours. You can't get new programs printed up in less than 4 hours. There isn't a printer in New York that could do that.
Well, have you tried?
There's no sense in trying. It can't be done.
Oh, what am I going to do?
Mrs. Mahaffey, you've written a wonderful play. You should be proud.
Oh, I'm ruined.
Mr. Gelb has such faith in your play. He's even had your name put up in lights.
Light?
Well, yes, on the marquee. You know, over the entrance to the theater. It was supposed to be a surprise for you. It's a very unusual honor. He thought you'd be so happy.
Happy? I'll never be happy again. Oh, how can you do this to me?
Mrs. Dillingham.
Oh, I'm ruined for life.
Perhaps you'd better go, Mr. Harris.
If you need me, I'll be at the office.
Good. Because I think it's very likely I'm going to need you.
Well, I bombed out. That was obvious. I'd gone there to try and pacify an hysterical woman, and if anything, I'd made things worse. Well, what did Norman expect from me? A miracle?
I know you tried.
She kept yelling, I'm ruined. I'll kill myself.
She wouldn't do that, would she?
Well, at this point, I'm not prepared to say what she'd do or wouldn't do. She's one crazy lady.
Well, crazy enough, the curtain goes up tonight, 8 o'clock sharp. Who's that, for Pete's sake?
You want me to find out?
I don't want to talk to anybody.
Mr. Harris.
Norm, it's Mrs. Dillingham.
Oh, is that Mr. Gale?
Yes. How's Mrs. Mahaffey?
Not too good. That's why I had to talk to you. I think there's something you should know.
Come in, Mrs. Dillingham.
Mr. Gelb, I know Mrs. Mahaffey seems to be acting in a very peculiar manner.
You could say that. Yes, you could say that.
Wanting the name Martin Vervain put on the program.
It's crazy.
Not completely. Because, you see, Martin Vervain did write the play.
But you mean to stand there and tell me Mrs. Mahaffey did not write this play? She stole it?
No.
Plagiarized it?
No.
Then what did she do? Where did she get hold of it?
Oh, please.
Mrs. Dillingham, was Mr. Vervain a collaborator?
You could call him that.
Mr. Vervain and Mrs. Mahaffey worked on the play together?
Yes. That's it.
Oh, she never told me that. And now this Vervain wants to cut in on the royalties. He'll sue.
No, Mr. Gale.
Well, he can sue Mrs. Mahaffey, not me. I acted in complete good faith. My hands are clean.
Mr. Vervain won't sue anybody, Mr. Gelb. Mr. Vervain's been dead for 50 years.
People tend to ask writers the oddest things and the tritest. Where do you get your ideas? Do you write every day or just when you feel like it? Do you use a typewriter or put it down in longhand? Do you write in the morning or the afternoon or at night? As though by learning the mechanics, anyone could write. If you've ever tried it, you already know that nothing could be further from the truth. We'll return shortly with Act Two.
Act Two of The Imposter, that is a very nice little story shaping up here.
Yeah. A guy named for been dead 50 years collaborating.
Yeah. That's the genuine ghostwriter, if you will. Bazinga.
Yeah. It was ghostwritten.
That happens. That does happen. But, usually not with a real live ghost.
Oh. So, let's see. I can have a seance, and let's see, someone can help me write a paper for school. Let's see, channeling the spirit of,
Houdini.
Houdini. Hey, yeah, dude, listen, need to write a paper. Help me out here.
listen to our old Houdini show from way back, and I don't know when. I'll find out in a minute.
I think it was October of our first October there.
It might have been.
I believe.
I know it was
way
Halloween
back
related.
Then. Yeah. Because every year on Halloween, the magicians still get together to try and call in the spirit of Harry Houdini. It was our second year.
We were doing seance.
Okay.
And we played the Harry Houdini seance.
Right. And now that seance was the 10th anniversary of seances. And the last one his wife ever participated in.
Yep.
After that, she didn't believe he could come back.
Or he wasn't coming back.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Or
he did come back, but just no one could really understand what he was saying.
You got a point there. It was from July 27th, 2018. Check it out in the archive, gang. We'll wait while you listen.
Mm-hmm.
No, we won't.
No, we won't.
We got too much story left for that.
It's the season.
season is the reason.
Yep. And how come all the Christmas stuff is done and all the Halloween stuff is already 50% off? Huh? Tell me that. It's only October 1st. This is the 1st
of
October. Come on.
It's annoying. That is annoying.
by October 3rd, it'll be 75% off.
Except for the candy. Except for the candy.
Yeah. There's that. Wow. My ripoff. Hello.
Oh, my gosh. Did you see the price of the candy? You could go broke feeding these little buggers coming around.
Yeah.
This year, they're getting coleslaw.
Have you seen the cost of cabbage? You see how much cabbage it takes to buy cabbage this year? Come on.
Cabbage is actually cheap. And then I'll just blop it into their bags, you know. Glop it in with lots of mayo. There you go. Hey.
I got a rock.
I got mayonnaise.
Mayo. I got Miracle Whip, man. What's with this?
Oh, please. That's a battle in our house. I am for mayonnaise. She is for Miracle Whip.
Oh,
well,
my.
I grew up on Miracle Whip, but there are certain things that mayonnaise I feel is better on, so. You know, I try to get the best of both worlds there.
Yep.
Mayo. And, of course, you have vegan mayo as well.
I thought mayonnaise was vegan, wasn't it?
No, it's
what,
got
what
egg.
Do they use?
It's got egg.
Has egg. Egg.
Oh.
Has egg.
Oh.
Yeah.
I get so confused being a non-vegan.
Yep. I'm aware of it. It's just like if you can survive on that, hey, more power to you. I guess anybody could survive on it, but
Must have been confusing for Spock, who was half a vegan, half a human. You know.
Yeah. That's right.
Every Star Trek fan that is hearing this. Their half of just went up.
I just created high blood pressure. Yes, I did.
Pretty much.
That's all right. The treatment? Ice cream. And lots
ice
of it.
Cream is the answer. Yeah.
I am one of those people, if I have a taste for it, I could have ice cream in the dead middle of winter. Absolutely.
Well, me too. Me too.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
It's nicer in the summer, but sometimes you just got to, your body starts shaking. You got to get that.
Because remember, ice cream is not just for breakfast anymore, you know?
Yeah. I'm limited to vanilla now because I have to share with my dog. He gets a little scoop. No chocolate for you, puppy.
Well, what about strawberry? No, well.
He's not a berry person. I've tried giving him fruit. He likes bananas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, try butter pecan.
For a dog? Maybe.
I suppose.
Yeah. That could work.
I mean, the pecans are plenty of protein. They're nice and crunchy. It's no more crunchier than a milk bone.
True. True. With that in mind, let us get on to part two.
I'm still thinking about ice cream.
I am too.
Oh, my gosh. Pumpkin ice cream. Everything in October is pumpkin. Where is pumpkin ice cream?
No, thank you.
I could do that.
Come now, Dave.
Come on. I don't even have a bowl big enough to put pumpkin ice cream in.
You don't use the whole pumpkin, Dave. All right, let's move
on. Oh!
Oh, a lot of radio. Oh,
nobody tells me these things. Nobody tells me.
Lots of radio.
You've been edumacated.
Tons of it. More radio than you could possibly imagine. I mean, I'm talking a lot of radio.
Lottery. How much radio? A lot, yes.
Oh, yeah, a whole lot.
A whole lot of radio.
A lot of radio.
Okay, I guess you're waiting for this.
You may not find us on your TV, because in case you did not know, we're being brought to you by...
Norman Gelb, theatrical producer, and his assistant, Ted Harris, have been disturbed, to put it mildly, by the demands of their new and talented playwright, Kay Mahaffey, to remove her name from the programs and substitute the name of Martin Vervain. The demand seems pointless as well as impossible. The opening is to take place this very night. As our first act ended, Mrs. Mahaffey's friend, Dorothy Dillingham, stood in the office of Mr. Gelb, and we heard...
Was Mr. Vervain a collaborator? They worked on the play together?
You could say that, yes.
Oh, she never told me that. And now this Vervain wants to cut in on the royalties. He'll sue. Well, he can sue Mrs. Mahaffey, not me. My hands are clean.
Mr. Vervain won't sue anybody, Mr. Gelb. Mr. Vervain's been dead for 50 years.
Norman and I just sat there, looking stupid.
I know this must sound strange to you.
Strange? You said strange.
It does sound a little strange.
It would to anybody who doesn't understand automatism.
Automatism?
Never heard of it.
Well, you see, in the field of parapsychology, in which I happen to be very well versed...
Mrs. Dillingham, why don't you start at the beginning and tell us how Mrs. Mahaffey got mixed up with Mr. Vervain, how they happened to get together and write this play.
Yeah, start at the beginning.
All right, I'll do that.
Please.
Well, Kay Mahaffey and I are very good, very old friends. We went to school together. Her husband died, and my husband died the same year. I took a little house up in the Catskills, and Kay went on living in New York because she got a job at the United Nations.
Mm, translating, we know that.
Well, every Saturday almost, I'd come into New York, and we'd have lunch and go to a matinee. And this particular Saturday, over the luncheon table... You're not looking well, Kay, if you'll forgive my saying so.
Oh, I haven't been sleeping well, that's the truth.
Oh, my dear.
Well, it's living alone. Even after all these years, I can't get used to it.
William visits me every night. It's a great comfort.
Oh, Dorothy, please, don't get started on that spiritualist stuff again.
I know you don't believe in it.
It's fantasy. It's pure fantasy.
Call it anything you like. William does visit me.
Well, I simply can't go along with you on that. Although...
Yes? What are you thinking?
The oddest thing happened at the UN yesterday. I wasn't going to tell you about it. I wasn't going to tell anybody because it was so weird.
What? What was it?
Well, the man who does the French translating, he started to cough. And for a few seconds, he controlled it well enough, but... Then I could sense that it was getting the better of him, and I...
Yes, yes.
I jumped in and took over.
In French?
Yes.
But you can't speak French.
Oh, I told you it was weird. Of course, it was only for a sentence or two, but they told me later I was perfectly accurate, and my accent was quite good.
Kay, you have gifts. Believe me, I've always thought so, but... I didn't want to discuss it with you because you've always been such a goat.
A what? A goat?
That's what we call the skeptics. Goats. Believers like me are called sheep.
Well, I think I'll stay with the goats.
But, my dear, your subconscious self has great power. Actually, everyone's has. Far greater power than the primary consciousness, the one we live with. Don't you see? When you jumped in for the French translator... Your subconscious self took over. You hadn't been sleeping well. You told me so. You were over the border.
I was what?
Over the border. Your incarnate spirit was sufficiently over the border to receive
but still able to control its own superliminal. You were able to receive from the French translator, but still able to say the words aloud.
Oh, Dorothy, I don't know. It sounds like gibberish.
Tell you what, after the matinee, come back with me to the Catskills. Stay overnight. You need the rest anyway, and we can talk some more. After the matinee, we drove up to my house together. I knew she was still very skeptical towards the whole thing, not to say hostile. So, on the way, I kept the conversation on very mundane subjects. Kay hardly said anything at all. I made her go and lie down while I fixed dinner. And after we'd finished eating, without any prompting from me, she said,
"What you were saying at lunch about the power of the subconscious self."
"Yes."
How do you get in touch with it, with the power?"
"Well, there are different ways. I use a Ouija board."
"A Ouija board? I didn't know they still made those things."
"Oh, my dear. Everyone who's into parapsychology knows about Ouija boards."
"Do you have one?"
"Of course I have one. Do you want to see it?"
"I might look at it."
"I'll get it. It's right here."
"What you said at lunch about being over the border?"
"Yes."
"I don't know if that's what I'm feeling right now. I have an idea. It's just the mountain air."
"How do you feel right now?"
"Sort of disconnected."
"Disassociated?"
"I don't know what that means."
"It could be the beginning of a trance state."
"It's very odd. You know, I'm not sure I like it."
"Well, here's the Ouija board."
"I think my mother had one of those."
"It has the letters and numbers from 1 to 10, plus yes and no, and goodbye."
"Oh, it's such a funny name, Ouija."
"Well, it's a combination of the French and the German words for yes. Oui, French. Ja, German."
"How strange."
"Kay, I know what you're thinking. What happened yesterday at the UN? How you translated into French?"
"When I only know German."
"Oh, let's start, shall we? Oh, this is all so exciting. Now, this little three-legged, heart-shaped thing is a planchette. We put our fingertips on it very lightly." "Yes, that's right. And then we wait till it moves." We were there for hours, till almost midnight. For the first hour, nothing happened. Nothing at all. I was willing to give up. I thought Kay was too tired to continue. Perhaps we'd do better in the morning. But about 10 o'clock, the planchette started to move. It spelled M-A-R. And then it stopped.
"Martin."
"Yes, but we didn't know that then."
"Well, what else did it spell out?"
"Nothing. Just M-A-R. Over and over again for 2 solid hours.
"Then what happened?"
"Well, a little after 11, Kay looked so exhausted, I insisted that she go to bed. We weren't getting anything new on the Ouija board. I said we could try again in the morning. So we each went to our own rooms and went to sleep. At least I did. But in the morning, when I went to make breakfast, there was Kay, standing over the table, staring at the Ouija board. "Morning, Bright Eyes. Did you sleep well?"
"I didn't sleep at all."
"Okay.
Did you?"
"Like a top. Never woke up once."
"Are you sure?"
"Well, of course I'm sure."
"You didn't come into my room whistling?"
"Of course not."
"Well, somebody did. Are you sure? You might have walked in your sleep."
"I never walk in my sleep, and I can't whistle."
"Dorothy, a little after midnight, just after I'd gotten into bed, I heard it, the whistling. It was an old tune, Indian Love Call." "Do you remember that?"
"Yes, I remember. Well, was that all? Just the whistling?"
"I think so. Except I seem to hear someone scolding me. Someone very annoyed and irritable.
Okay, let's use the Ouija board again, right this minute. Maybe, just
Dorothy,
maybe.
Do you mind if I use it by myself?
Why, no.
I have this feeling someone is trying to reach me. If I could just be alone.
Of course, I left her alone and went out into the kitchen. But a minute later, I heard it. Very faint, but unmistakable.
Well, she could have been whistling it herself, couldn't she?
Well, of course she could have been.
Of course she could have.
Well, let me tell you what happened next. I took a good long time fixing breakfast. I ate by myself in the kitchen so as not to disturb Kay in the living room. I cleaned up and putted around, and a couple of hours later, I looked up to see Kay standing in the doorway.
Dorothy, I know who it is.
Who, Kay?
The M-A-R. You remember how those letters kept showing up on the Ouija board last night?
Yes, just M-A-R.
They are the first letters of the name Martin.
Do you know a Martin?
Well, this Martin is Martin Vervain.
And you know a Martin Vervain?
Well, this Martin Vervain died 50 years ago.
Okay.
He was an actor. A very great actor, a star. It was his whistle I heard last night, and his voice, though it was very indistinct.
Maybe he was reciting from one of the plays he starred in.
No, no, I told you. He was scolding me.
But why?
Because it seems he has a play in mind. A play he wanted to write while he was a living actor. But he never had the time or the leisure to write it.
But why should he scold you?
Because he's been trying for years now to persuade me to write it for him.
Only he could never get through to you.
Something like that.
Kay, Kay, are you going to? Are you going to write the play?
I must. Don't you think so? Martin Vervain, after all these years, has gotten through to me. Dorothy, I can't let him down.
That night, about midnight, I heard it. I heard the soft creaking of Kay's bed, heard the door of her room open and close, heard her go into the living room, pull up a chair, and I knew, I was sure that through the Ouija board, she was receiving the words of the departed actor Martin Vervain. Sure enough, in the morning, I went into the living room, and there was Kay, her face glowing, though she had had no sleep for a day and a half.
The first act is finished, Dorothy. All night I worked. It went so fast I could hardly keep up, but the first act is complete. Oh, Dorothy, who would have thought that I...
Why not you? Why should you not be an automatist? Elizabeth Barrett Browning and Victor Hugo received messages by automatic writing. Why not you?
Oh, I never dreamed.
It's no more than simple telepathy. The fusing of the incarnate with the excarnate spirit.
Is that what's happening?
Martin Vervain is the communicator. That's all an entity ever is.
An entity, you say?
An essence. A being from beyond. A sender. As you are a receiver.
Oh, Dorothy. Dorothy, that this should happen to me.
Sunday night, at about midnight, I heard it again. And I heard Kay get up and go into the living room. But this time she didn't pull up a chair. Instead, I heard the soft tread of her feet up and down the room. And I heard, even though I could not make out the exact words, I could hear her voice, low, soft, all through the night, her voice declaiming.
What was she doing?
Why, she was composing the play, of course, as it came to her from Martin Vervain.
A play does not get written that way.
I know you are one of the goats, Mr. Gerhope.
Well, what happened next, Mrs. Dillingham?
Well, the next day was Monday, and Kay phoned the UN to tell them she wouldn't be in. That, as a matter of fact, she'd have to take off the rest of the week.
And every night, about midnight, I heard the whistle, and I'd hear Kay get up and go into the living room. But along about Thursday, I think it was, I didn't hear her voice as I had before. I heard instead, you'll never believe this, I heard a typewriter. Yes, a typewriter. Kay was taking down Martin Vervain's words on a typewriter.
It's incredible.
I told you you wouldn't believe me.
You must admit, Mrs. Dillingham, it's not easy.
Oh, no, of course it isn't. The part about the typewriter, I found that hard to believe myself. Though I had heard of such a thing a long time ago. Well, the next morning I confronted Kay with it.
You don't mind my using your typewriter, do you?
Of course not, but did you... Was it really...
Was I really typing the play? Yes, of course I was.
It sounded so easy. You went so fast.
Oh, Dorothy, there's nothing to it. You know what I've decided? I've decided I'm the entity.
Oh, no, Kay. Martin Vervain is the entity. You are the automatist.
That may have been true in the beginning, but then I went ahead on my own. This is my play. I've even thought of the title. The Color of Desire. Do you like it?
Yes, but I
was just typing up the title page. The Color of Desire by Kay Mahaffey. There.
Tell me, John Matthias, someone is supposed to have said to the man who came to be known as St. John of the Cross, tell me, how do you write your beautiful canticles? To which the poet priest, they say, replied, sometimes God helps me, and sometimes I do it by myself. If the great saint received help from the deity, why should not Kay Mahaffey get help from a deceased actor named Martin Vervain? No reason at all that I can see. We'll continue shortly with Act 3.
We'll be back for Part 3 in just a little bit.
Yep, we got a real ghostwriter on hand here tonight.
Yes.
So,
having fun. In the way the tale is being told in the office.
Quite right. I must admit, in regards to the psychic phenom, I consider myself a goat.
There you
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
Nice cue. Nice cue. Very
nice.
Nice
cue.
What a segue.
Yep.
But you don't want to own one, especially if you're the inventor. The segue.
Yep. No, yeah. He kind of went over the cliffs in his, yep.
It's terrible.
Works real good. Real good.
It's a revolutionized cars, except,
Exit, stage cliff. Yes.
Yes.
Exit, stage cliff. Oh, my gosh.
Oh my.
Yeah.
What an interesting tale. An interesting tale going on here.
Intriguing. So we shall find out how vengeful a spirit is when someone has taken their work.
Yep.
But they gave it to him. The guy gave it to her.
Yep.
You know?
One thing I got from this show, I never broke down the word Ouija before like that. It is. It's we.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we.
I don't know if it means anything, but that's what it is.
Yes,
we can ponder that while we wrap up The Imposter from CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
In our second act, we heard from the lips of Dorothy Dillingham the account of how her friend Kay Mahaffey came to write a play. How, after a session with the Ouija board, a discarnate spirit, who in his incarnate existence had been an actor named Martin Vervain, made himself known to Mrs. Mahaffey and conveyed to her telepathically a play he had wanted to write himself during his lifetime. As the act ended, we heard Mrs. Mahaffey say,
"Dortha, I am the entity. Kay, Martin Vervain is the entity. You are the automatist."
That may have been true at first, and then I went ahead on my own. This is my play. I've even given it a title, The Color of Desire. I was just typing the title page. The Color of Desire by Kay Mahaffey. There.
The next morning, we got out the yellow pages and we looked up theatrical producers. And we tore the page out of the phone book and glued it to the Ouija board and moved the planchette over it. And the planchette stopped at the name Norman Gelb. And we gathered up all the pages and put them in a folder and sent them to you.
That is incredible.
I know it's hard for you to believe.
It's impossible.
Mrs. Dillingham, when Mrs. Mahaffey came in here to discuss the production, all during rehearsals and all the time out of town on tour, she seemed all right. She wasn't, you know, the way she is now.
I know. But she wrote me, I think it was from Philadelphia, that Martin Vervain was starting to give her trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Oh, she didn't say exactly, but she did say he was using bad language and threatening her.
What, you mean physically?
I think so.
Mrs. Dillingham, Mrs. Mahaffey has been under a great strain.
I should say she has.
No. I mean for a long time. Maybe ever since her husband died. You know, living alone, earning a living, all that. And then she writes this wonderful play. It just comes to her. These things do happen that way sometimes. And it's bought and cast and put into rehearsal and produced and tried out. That's all a lot of excitement and involvement. Even if you've been through it before, it's a big strain. And it wouldn't surprise me a bit if Mrs. Mahaffey sort of, broken down a little. Her nerves have gotten the best of her. That's all it is.
I'll get it. Norman Gelb's office.
Let me speak to Mrs. Dillingham. I know she's there.
Sure. It's for you. I think it's Mrs. Mahaffey.
Oh. Kay? Oh, dear. Oh, that's awful. Oh, Kay. Yes, of course I will. Right away, dear. I have to go. He's with her and behaving badly.
Oh, sure. You run along. We'll see you at the opening.
I'm not sure Kay will be able to come to the opening, Mr. Gelb.
Not coming to the opening of her own play? Who ever heard of such a thing? This is going to be a night to remember.
Well, Norman and I will remember it, that's for sure. He and I stood up in the back of the theater all through the performance. The play had never gone better. Everything went like clockwork. The actors were magnificent. And when the curtain came down on the third act...
Oh, wow!
Terrific!
Hello! Oh,
Arthur!
Darn shame she's not here.
Oh, yeah.
Arthur!
Finally, they stopped applauding. Finally, they emptied the theater. Norm and I sat in the green room, happy and exhausted. Only one thing remained, the notices. What would the critics say about the play? It didn't seem possible they wouldn't rave about it. But one thing is sure about the theater, you can never be sure.
What do you think, Ted?
Oh, a smash.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, can't miss.
Yeah.
Still, critics are funny people.
Yeah. Well, what do you say we go across the street?
Okay. Where's your coat?
Just across the street. I don't need it.
Okay, let's go.
You know, Ted, it's a funny thing about the theater. One minute it's full of life. Sound, lights, people. The performance ends, the applause stops, the people leave, and it's silent as death and as dark. Look, even the lights on the marquee are going out. Okay, let's cross the street. Oh, no. Wait a minute, Ted.
What's the matter?
You know, I can't stand the idea of Mrs. Mahaffey not being with us when the notices start to come in. I don't want to sit there with just you and my mother. Go on up to Kay's apartment and see if you can't talk her into joining us.
Well, why don't you come with me? She'll listen to you better than to me.
My mother's over there waiting for us. You go, huh?
Okay.
Tell her we just have to have her with us, huh, Ted? Tell her it's the big night for all of us.
Well, I got a taxi and drove to Kay's place. When the door opened and it wasn't Kay Mahaffey, it was Dorsa Dillingham. And she looked worried.
Come in, Mr. Harris.
Isn't Mrs. Mahaffey here?
She's in the bedroom, but don't go in there. She won't recognize you.
Is she sick?
Not exactly. The doctor left just before you got here. He says she's all right. She'll come out of it.
Come out of what?
Well, the doctor said it's a sleep of exhaustion, but I know better.
What do you think it is?
I think it's deep trance.
Oh, no. Mrs. Dillingham...
It started at 8 o'clock. I was in here, and she was in the bedroom. I heard her cry out, don't, please don't. Mr. Harris, I'm sure he was with her.
You mean...
Martin Vervain. After a while, I went in there, and she was lying on the bed, perfectly quiet. I spoke to her, but she didn't answer me. That's when I called the doctor. I was worried.
Well, of course you were.
The doctor said he found... bruise marks on her body.
Oh?
You know how I think they got there?
Now, Mrs. Dillingham...
I know. You're not a believer.
No, I'm sure there's a simple explanation for the bruises.
That's what the doctor said. But I know better.
Mrs. Dillingham, Mr. Gelb and I were very disappointed that neither of you came to the opening.
Oh, did it go well?
Oh, very well. Very, very well.
Oh, excuse me. Hello? Oh, yes, just a second. For you.
Thanks. Hello?
Ted, the notices are starting to come in. Radio, TV, Ted, they are sensational, fantastic, out of this world.
Oh, well.
Tell Mrs. Mahaffey she's got to come down here. How is she, by the way?
Well, I haven't seen her yet.
Oh, well, tell her this is something she can't miss. Once in a lifetime thing, unforgettable.
Marvelous, Norm. I'll do my best here.
Don't take no for an answer. I'll see you, and make it soon.
Yeah, yeah. See you soon, Norman.
That was... Mr. Gelb.
Yes, and he says...
The phone ring?
Oh, yes, dear. It was Mr. Norman Gelb.
Oh, Mr. Gelb?
Mrs. Mahaffey, Mr. Gelb was calling from a restaurant across the street from the theater where your play opened tonight.
Oh, yes. The play.
Mrs. Mahaffey, the reviews are starting to come in. Radio, television. Mrs. Mahaffey, they're all great.
Oh, I wrote the play. Just as Mr. Vervain... told me to. I never corrected or changed a thing.
Mrs. Mahaffey, Mr. Gelb wants the three of us to join him.
He does?
Yes, and when you walk in, probably everybody will applaud.
For me?
Well, of course for you.
How will they know who I am?
Well, your picture's been in the papers, and you'll be with me.
Okay, let's go.
Well...
I'll get your coat.
They'll really... applaud?
Sure. And we'll sit with Mr. Gelb and people will stop by the table and congratulate you and tell you how much they liked your play.
Oh, it does sound like fun.
Oh, it is fun, Mrs. Mahaffey. It's fun like no other fun in the world.
Here's your coat, Kay. I've got mine.
Ladies, shall we go? In the taxi, I didn't say much. I was secretly pleased with myself. For once, I had succeeded with Mrs. Mahaffey, and I look forward to watching her take in all the glories, all the splendor of the theatrical world, which too often is grubby and depressing. But tonight, she'd see it with its best foot forward, and she would be thrilled. So far as I know, there's no bigger thrill to be had than the one that comes from a play that's a smash hit.
I hope I'm doing the right thing.
Of course you are.
You just wait and see, Mrs. Mahaffey. It'll be the experience of your life.
Will it?
Well, you bet it will.
Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, are you whistling?
Me? No. Are you?
No, I can't whistle.
I knew I shouldn't have come.
Driver.
Yeah?
Were you whistling just now?
Why should I be whistling?
Is the radio on?
You want the radio on?
No.
Here you are.
Come on, Mrs. Dillingham.
I heard it.
I know I did. Didn't you?
Yes, yes. Come on, Mrs.
I shouldn't have come.
Oh, yes, you should.
Look. Look across the street.
What is it, Kay?
Look up there. The lights.
The marquee.
It's lighting up. The lights are going on. One by one.
The color of desire. By
Martin Vervain.
Ted Harris told you at the very start. He said you wouldn't believe it, didn't he? And you don't, do you? I don't blame you. It's a completely incredible story. Do I believe it? Well, I am rather like the White Queen in Alice in Wonderland. I have trained myself to believe three incredible things before breakfast. Once you get the hang of it, it's easy. Try it. You'll discover that half the things you find incredible turn out to be true. Incredible, isn't it? Mrs. K. Mahaffey never wrote another play. The Color of Desire ran for 3.5 years. Did Martin Vervain desert her? Or did she desert Martin Vervain? There have been several playwrights who have written one successful play and were never able to do it again. Perhaps K. Mahaffey was one of these. Or should I say Martin Vervain was one? I leave it up to you. Believe whatever you like. Whatever you believe may very well turn out to be true. Our cast included Norman Rose, Don Scardino, Bryna Rayburn, and Ann Petoniak. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by General Electric Citizen Band Radios. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time... Pleasant dreams.
Macabre.
Macabre. Timpani there too.
A little bit.
So, Vervain got his name and lights after all.
Yeah.
Nice touch. Wonderful story. And
wonderful.
Even something we can learn beyond the story itself, perhaps.
You mean like something profound? Eerie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar. It's okay to be a guest, a ghostwriter, but it's best to be a ghostwriter if you're truly a ghost. That's it.
Pretty good. It was good for one of those, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so there we go. Another wonderful tale. From the macabre of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Macabre.
Well, certainly. Absolutely.
Oh, you keep confusing it with that antivirus. See? That's where you're coming in with a mistake here, you know.
Macabre.
It's not the antivirus.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the antivirus. Yeah. Macabre. I forgot about that one.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Well, we got time left. You know what that means.
Lots of things. Oh, we get to have fun.
All right, it's time for... Time for Eerie House Calisthenics. Ready?
Uh-oh. Wait a minute. Nobody told me to be exercise here tonight. Nobody told me that. Math is bad enough. Exercise is worse.
There's no math. There's jumping jacks.
You got to count. So no, I don't do math.
I don't jump.
Well, I'm a Jill versus a Jack, so I'll leave it to you, gentlemen.
Yeah, alrighty. My Jack is out in the garage. That's it. Yeah, that's as far as I go.
That's where he belongs. Well, all right.
Well, I thought calisthenic we could do. We could walk up to the jukebox machine and put a wooden nickel in there and see if we can hear something entertaining, perchance. That's a lot of energy that burns.
That's an idea.
Yeah.
If you're buying, I'm flying.
All righty. I've got my Ponderosa pine coin right here.
You in my coffee and spread you on my bread.
What?
And I wish that you were in the highball going to my head. Dear, when you sit across the table, I'm then like the giant in the fable. Beef, five, bow, fum. I'm overcome with the cannibalistic feeling. I'd like to smother you with mushrooms and everything. I claim you'd be a dainty dish to set before a king. Oh, sweetheart, if I could obtain you as part of my daily menu, I'd to dunk you in my coffee and spread you on my bread.
Just save this for Halloween. Jeffrey Dahmer night. Absurd, I love it. So happy. Dum dum dum.
be a whole different song if Peter Lorre were singing it, right? I'd like to dunk you in my coffee.
I'd like to
and then take a big bunny game. Oh, yeah.
None of that latte. No latte.
Oh, lots of time left. Why doesn't somebody go up to that wheel and give it a spin?
Why doesn't someone?
Why doesn't someone?
Dave.
Someone? Me?
Oh, if
you insist.
Hey, she sprung a nickel here for the song. You can spin.
Yeah. Hey,
okay,
must I do
I guess
everything?
I guess I can get up and walk that far. No jumping jacks, though. So I get up to the wheel, I hop, skip, and a jump away, and I will reach up to the top and get ready to spin that big old wheel of radio.
Go for it.
Around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Don, when I smiled at Harry James, you see how worried Phil Harris looked?
Oh, yeah.
Jello again. This is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I like that beautiful baby introduction. Was that just a lucky guess, or did you have authentic information?
Well, Jack, when I was over to your house for dinner the other night, I took a peek at that old family album of yours.
Oh, Don.
And I must say you were a gorgeous infant. Were you really so good-looking?
Well, I don't want to sound hammy or anything like that, but for the first 17 months of my life, I was a length ahead of Robert Taylor. In fact, I won 4 blue diapers.
I can imagine.
Say, Don, I'll bet you were quite a healthy-looking kid yourself, weren't you?
Well, Jack,
I could just see you as a baby, Don, bouncing your mother on your knee. And I can hear your mother singing to you, "Rock-a-bye, baby, on the treetop."
Oh, she sure did.
That tree must have been a redwood. Well, anyway, I'd like to be a baby again. I really shouldn't keep talking like this, but I was about the cutest little Dickens in Waukegan. In fact, people from all around used to come to my father's meat market just to see me. Huh?
Meat market? Why, I thought your father ran a clothing store.
Well, Don, it was a combination meat market and clothing store. On Saturdays, we used to run a special, a pound of hamburger with 2 pair of pants. Oh, went over very big. I remember one time...
Hello, Jack. What are you talking about?
We're talking about me. Don just happened to mention that he saw my family album and that I was a beautiful child.
You beautiful?
Yes, I was. Not only that, I developed very quickly. When I was only 3 months old, I had 4 lovely teeth.
Well, you're right back where you started from.
We should get laughs like that on our own show. Always kills me. Now listen, Mary. I have a full set of teeth right now. And with the exception of a little argument I had with a cab driver in Toledo, they're all my own.
And what's that price tag doing on the 3rd molar?
Don't be funny.
Say, Jack, did I hear you say that you had an argument with a cab driver in Toledo?
Yes, but of course that was years ago.
Well, what was the fight all about?
Oh, nothing. He just happened to say something I didn't like, and he hit me. Otherwise, Toledo was lovely.
Say, Don, when you were looking through that album, did you see the picture of Jack's uncle on the big white horse?
Yes, I did.
That was my Uncle Beaumont, you know.
And did you see the tree in back with a rope dangling from it and that big crowd of men standing around?
Mary, my uncle didn't steal that horse. That was just a scene from a Western movie he was making called The Code of the West. What are you laughing at?
I'll bet he never saw the preview.
He did, and he was a fine actor.
Hey, Mr. Benny.
Oh, hello. Hello, Dennis. I didn't see you.
Oh, I was around here. I heard you telling everybody what a beautiful baby you were.
Well, Don brought up the subject. Ida never mentioned it. Have you got any cute baby pictures, Dennis?
None where I'm facing the camera.
Oh.
You know, Mr. Benny, I wasn't a very pretty kid, but I was as smart as a whip.
Smart, eh? I'll bet you were.
All right, you can laugh, but when I was 12 years old, I recited the Gettysburg Address.
At 12? What's clever about that?
Could Lincoln do it?
All right, Dennis, we won't go into that. But if you were so smart at the age of 12, what happened to you in the meantime?
I don't know. All of a sudden, everything went blank.
That's what I thought. Say, where's Phil?
Oh, he's around here somewhere. By the way, Jack, I don't know whether I ought to tell you this or not, but Phil's pretty sore about that crack you made at rehearsal.
What crack?
You know, when you told him that if he didn't like it here, he could go out and get his own program.
Oh. Well, gee, Don, I was only kidding. I didn't mean anything.
Well, Phil took it pretty seriously, and he said he's going to leave you.
Leave me? Why, I made the guy. Gee, when I picked him up, he was demonstrating curlers in a drugstore window. Say, Mary, did Phil say anything to you about this wild scheme of his?
Well, yes and no.
What do you mean, yes or no?
Yes, he told me, and no,
I ain't gonna tell you. All right, I'm not worried about it. I can get another orchestra leader. Matter with Harry James, that's bad, I suppose. Anyway, Phil ought to be loyal enough to discuss things with me before he takes any definite step.
Hey, Jack, here he comes now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson. How's the boy?
Jackson. You know, Phil, it's cute the way you call me that every week, you know. Say, what's this gag I hear about you getting your own program?
It's not a gag. You and I have been fighting so much lately, I thought it'd be better to call it quits, that's all.
Oh, that's silly.
Silly nothing. You're just tough to get along with, that's all.
Oh, me?
Yes, you. You're always flying off the handle.
I am not. I'm sweet and lovable.
And you're always yelling and shouting at me.
Shouting at you?
And you're always losing your temper.
Why, you baggy-eyed ingrate, I never lose my temper, and you know it. I love you, you louse.
Oh, sure.
Well, now listen to me, Phil Harris.
Gee, you think they were married.
Keep out of this, Dennis. Now, look, Phil, look. I'm not begging you to stay on this program.
Then get up off your knees.
I'm not on my knees. Anyway, Phil, there's no use arguing about it. You can't leave me because we've got a contract.
Some contract. I supply the orchestra, and when people throw money at us, I have to split it with you.
Oh, how often does that happen? Maybe once in a fortnight. And another thing.
Oh, Jack, what are you beefing about? If Phil wants to go, let him go.
Certainly.
You can get Abe Lyman to take his place.
Oh, that would be fine. Abe Lyman happens to be the cab driver that punched me in Toledo. That's all I need.
Say, Jack, you know a lot about music. Why don't you form your own orchestra?
Well, maybe I will. Say, I could organize a darn good swing band, believe me.
If you do, I got a swell name for it.
Never mind.
What is it, Mary?
Jack Benny and his Stinkolas.
Listen, Mary, I don't have to worry about getting a band together because Phil is only bluffing. If he went out on his own, where would he get a sponsor?
Don't worry about me. I've got a sponsor.
Oh, you have, eh?
Yeah, I'm going on the air for Macmillan's Corn Plasters.
Corn Plasters?
Yes, Corn Plasters.
Well, that fits. Half the time you're corny and the other half you're plaster. Anyway, Phil, if you're smart, you'd stay right here and try to be a little more... I'll answer it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny. This is Rochester.
Oh, you. What do you want?
Are you planning to come home for dinner tonight?
Well, certainly I am.
Well, if you want something to eat, you better bring some food home with you.
What are you talking about? There was plenty of food in the icebox when I left the house this morning. What happened to it?
In the which?
In the icebox. When I left this morning, it was just bulging with food.
Well, the swelling's going down now.
Rochester, did you throw another party this afternoon?
Well, come to think of it, a few of my friends dropped in for some tea and donuts.
Now, listen, if you just served tea and donuts, what happened to all those lamb chops?
Well, I ran out of donuts.
Yes?
So we bored holes in the chops and dumped them.
That's fine. Well, what happened to the big roast turkey that was in the icebox?
Oh, that was first prize in the bingo game.
Well, that's the last... last straw. Now, you just see that there's some food in the house when I get there.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
As long as you're coming home, will you bring my fan mail?
Yes, yes, I'll bring it. Goodbye. Darn, that Rochester eats me out of house and home. Well, that's all for us, fellas. Good luck and give them hell.
Betty and command performance, a little something for the troops there.
Yep, yep. And for our troops as well here at Erie House Radio. And want to also mention to welcome any of the Brunswick people from Bat TV who may have found our podcast thanks to Bat TV's promotion. And welcome to Erie House Radio.
Oh, welcome, welcome.
Very good. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Super welcome.
Yeah. We even have a little time for a little bit more fun yet.
Ooh, well, that leaves you to do something, Dale, since we've done all the work so far.
Okay,
yeah, we've done
the
all the work.
That's true. What? You're surprised? This is new. All right, I'll spin the wheel.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
You look very happy today.
Yeah, oh, I am. I just got a package from Uncle Otis's farm. It was a dozen fresh eggs.
Well, you ought to send a note of thanks.
What for? The chickens can't read.
True, I just never thought of it.
Oh, I love Uncle Otis's farm. When I was a little girl, I used to visit there all the time. And it was such a busy place. The chickens were always having chicks, and the cows were always having calves, and the goats were always having,
Well?
Goatees?
No. Their goats have kids.
Yeah, I know, but what do you call them?
Well, if it's a man, Sam, and if it's a girl, Madeline.
Oh. Anyway, we always had such fun. You know, there was one cow that Uncle Otis would always let us children milk. And one day, I'd milk the cow and get a pail full of milk. And the next day, his little daughter, Jeannie, would milk her and get a pail full. And the next day, his little son, Tommy, would milk her and get nothing. And the next day
just
was
a
my
minute.
Turn.
Why wouldn't Tommy get any milk?
Well, he was practicing to be a Boy Scout, and he used to tie knots in everything he saw.
It's pretty rough on that animal.
Yes, I can remember Uncle Otis looking at her and saying, "How now, brown cow?"
Must be healthy living on a farm.
But farming isn't all fun. Uncle Otis felt awful when a cyclone hit his prize pigs.
Did it kill them?
Oh, no. You know how pigs' tails go like this?
Yeah.
Well, the cyclone went like that and unwound every tail.
Well, a pig with a straight tail isn't fit to eat.
Oh, but a farm is a wonderful place, George. I'll never forget it. One day, the ground is bare, and then the next day, you see little green shoots, and pretty soon, the fields are waving with corn.
Well, that's the miracle of nature.
Yes, that's what Uncle Otis said, because he planted lettuce.
Well, when the seed is young, he never knows what he'll grow up to be. You've got some great memories about your Uncle Otis.
Yeah, and my Aunt Jenny, too. You know, they love living on a farm. Except one time she got very mad at him because of what he did to her best hat.
What'd he do?
Well, it was a big straw hat, and she only wore it on Sundays. But during the week, Uncle Otis would sneak it out of the house and let his horse wear it.
How did Aunt Jenny find out?
Oh, well, on her way to church, she noticed that all the horses from the other farms would nod at her as she went by.
Ooh, a little mood music to wrap up the night here on Erie House Radio.
It has been a lot of fun, guys.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Some good stories, some good wheels, jukebox.
Whole lot of radio.
Whole lot of radio.
This is our first show of October. As the lovely CW has pointed out, it is Halloween month. So we're going to kick things off next weekend with some Alfred Hitchcock, a double feature drive-in. One for Saturday, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Or no, Friday, excuse me, is Mr.
Friday,
and Mrs. Smith. With Bob Hope, Carol Lombard, and Bill Goodwin. And then we're going to do
Rebecca. Bob Hope is filling in for, I think, Robert Young was in that. I think.
Yep. And then Rebecca with Ronald Coleman, Ida Lupino, and Judith Anderson.
Ooh.
So it'll be a very Hitchcockian type of weekend next weekend here on Erie House.
Sorry, guys. Yep. I had you on mute.
It's okay. Welcome back.
The story of my life.
Yeah. Well, you know, what came first? I had to go shopping, and people can look at me, as they usually do anyway, and say, what's all that weird talk about Erie and everything else?
Shut up and buy cabbage for Halloween. We're all serving coleslaw.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I know a great house where you can get some really great coleslaw for Halloween.
Yeah, that'd be a different kind of treat. Hey, coming up right after the show in about a little over 3 minutes here should be hopefully horror starring Gar the Ghoul and hopefully a new one. I know I saw that he was testing out the line a little earlier today. Hopefully all will be well with his cable and he'll be able to be there live and in makeup.
And
horror starring Gar the Ghoul. Yep.
Yeah, that's coming up. And just like Dave said, about 2.5 minutes now. And don't forget Tuesday night.
A quick push for Tuesday night again. Weirdness, really bad movie, we'll be on with one of our new productions there. We'll be at the law office of Buck and Burger King. And we'll be hosting the movie 12 Angry Men, actually the TV show 12 Angry Men. And have a Spaceship One episode in there as well. And all kinds of fun going there. On the Vortex, horrorhost.net, Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Ooh.
Ooh.
There you go, gang. If you haven't had enough of us, then there you go.
Virtual smorgasbord.
Yep. We're all over the place.
I thought they outlawed those during the pandemic.
Smorgasbord. They're back. They're back with a vengeance.
You mean it's over? Nobody told me.
Yeah, Biden said it was a couple weeks ago it was over, so it must be over.
And
yet,
you
I just came out of the store.
Politicians wouldn't lie to us. Politicians wouldn't lie to us, you know.
No,
never. Of course not. Thus why I'm still wearing my 95 mask.
There you go. I'm in John Travolta bubble is what I'm doing.
Oh, there
okay.
You go. You got me beat. I was getting the biohazard thing for, you know, I had it for 2020. I'm figuring it'll still work for Halloween. Just keep it. So there you go.
Nah, actually, I wore a diving helmet.
A diving helmet. Okay. That's
diving
that's
helmet.
Even a little
yeah.
heavier.
Yeah.
A little
yeah,
heavier.
20,000 leagues. That's
yep.
20,000 leagues going above and beyond.
All right, Gargoyle coming up next on the Twitches, and we'll see you next week right here at 6:30 Eastern. Bye.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
Thanks, Fonz, Ben.
When next we meet
in
Frankenstone.
Thanks, everybody.
Don't
in the chat room.
Come alone.
Can you dig it?
Hi, Tim.
Let's get a shovel. Ow.
Well, just in time. Just the end of our mind screen. Perfect. Perfect.
Perfect. Good.
Perfect.
Something ought to be. No, that was
sorry
a perfectly good radio program.
Sorry for my little shopping excursion, guys. Just had to go pick up a little nourishment.
Yeah, once in a while that's required.
As long as you got some ice cream, that's all you need.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I didn't get ice cream, but I did get potato chips. You know, it's the second perfect food.
There you go.
Okay.
Costco has good ones. They have these kettle chips. They're awesome.
Kettle chips. Is that like kettle corn?
Kettle chips are like super crispy.
Yeah.
They're real.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're kind of thick.
They're supposedly cooked in peanut oil. It makes them much crispier and soaks in a little bit to the.
And they got the Himalayan salt on them, man.
Oh,
yeah. No, my son belongs to Costco, so he drags me up there once in a while. And...
Oh, you have to have a membership to get in there, don't you?
Yeah, it's
a cult. And one thing, unfortunately, you'll never get to experience unless you're in Ohio. As far as I know, at the gas stations around here called the Circle K. Yeah, they're out throughout Canada, but I don't know what this product is throughout it. The Lawson's chip dip is just the most amazing chip dip in the world.
It is.
Hopefully, you know, it's throughout the system, but if it isn't, it's certainly throughout Ohio where you can get that. There was was original milk dairy.
We have a drive-through beverage that has the Lawson's chip dip, Dave. I used to have to drive all the way out to LaGrange. They had a drive-through beverage, you know, a little convenience drive-through thingy. But now
right.
I don't have to, you know, drive for 40 minutes to get them. Right here in town.
What are they putting in this stuff?
With a lot of magic.
Magic.
Onion,
magic.
Cream, and magic. Lots of magic.
So Circle K, if you're listening, anyone with the Circle K upper echelon, if you're looking for a sponsor.
Yeah. There you go.
You can pay some chip dip, too.
Lawson's was a convenience. They were known for their milk. They had these iconic milk bottles back in the days of big glass milk bottles. That was the shape of their sign.
Well, originally down at their dairy, which was downtown Cuyahoga Falls, you used to bring your own bucket to put the milk in.
Really? Jeez.
Yep. Yeah.
What?
That's when they originally started selling it, before they started delivering it, or they maybe been delivering it too, but you could bring your own bucket down to get your milk.
God.
Or whatever you want to put it in. So
put it under the spigot, and there you go.
That was during the days of the good old Ice Man and the Ice Wagon. Yeah.
Yep. I wonder how much it was for a pail of milk. And then
I don't know.
If you had to take it home on a hot day, oh.
Oh.
Well, that'd be okay. You'd have cottage cheese by the time you got home.
Oh.
Oh, no kidding.
I wonder if those days they knew about
yogurt yet.
Yeah. I'm sure they did. You know, in pioneer days and things like that, they were very creative and made do with what they had and made some pretty interesting things. My wife's been watching these videos on frontier cooking, and it was hard work, but you could make a lot of interesting things. It was hard work.
No kidding. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I know we live in stressful times, but everyone, we've got it soft. I mean, seriously, if I want a feast, and if I have the money,
which has always been the way. Well, not always been the way. If you had your own fields and grew your own food, planning upon that, but I digress. I can order a feast by just touching a tap on a smart device, having someone knocking on my door saying, yeah, you got the vegan repast with the vegan sauce and the vegan everything. Yeah, thanks. Fall again.
you mean Pioneer Cooking was harder than a microwave oven?
Yes, a little bit.
I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out
a little bit.
Wow.
I'm out.
No kidding. I mean, you had to go chop wood, then bring it in, then you had to turn it into kindling, then you had to get your stove, and if this is in the heat of summer, good luck with that. I say everybody can just go out into the yard and just dig up root vegetables and throw some water on it, and you're good. I'm not cooking.
Well, I would be cooking outside more in the summer. You know what I mean? You could cook outside.
I'd be the first Pioneer wife on strike. I'm sorry. I will cook in spring and autumn and winter, but summer, just go out and graze with the cattle. I'm done. I'm done. You know, I'm just going to put my feet in the pond and relax and clean up your own stuff. I'm done.
That's why you need a garden. You have nice, cool cucumbers in the summer, you know? And that's vegan good. My stuff's
cucumbers.
I don't know if you'd call it organic.
Cucumber, that's an almost pickle, right?
Almost. It's a pickle in training.
Yes. Has anyone ever tried pickles made from watermelon rind?
No. That sounds weird, but potentially good.
It is. You would find this at a lot of fairs, state fairs, and people would take the watermelon rind, which, you know, after you have the actual fruit, you keep the rind and you do the same process that you do with the cucumber. You prepare it, brine it, et cetera.
Yeah.
I've never tried that, but I have to. I'm probably going to go to the evil empire known as Amazon and look it up to buy some. I can't find some anywhere.
I don't know. When I go to a fair, I want to have the deep fried butter.
Oh, jeez.
Oh. And down the other lane, you have the heart surgeon on staff waiting there.
Oh.
That's at the other end of the fair, yeah.
At the county fair, they got this one booth. They do beef tips, mashed potatoes, and onions. Oh, my. And mushrooms. Lots of lovely mushrooms.
I have to admit, as though it is in one part of my mind disgusting and goes against everything healthy, against my yoga, my Pilates, my walking, I'd like to try a fried Snickers bar.
Okay.
Go right ahead. I think that's sacrilege myself. Why would you hurt a poor, innocent Snickers bar? It's horrible.
Well, they do the same thing with peanut butter cups.
Snickers bar.
Fried peanut butter cups, fried Twinkies.
No.
Yeah, deep fried Twinkies. Yeah.
Yeah, deep fried Oreos.
No. Deep fried Oreos. Yeah.
I think it's wrong.
Yep.
I think it's wrong.
Open your mind, Dale.
But it's
Open
a thing.
Mind.
It's a thing.
Open.
I guess a lot of people are going for it. So hey, if you like it, eat it.
Yeah.
Eat too for me.
Open your mind. Come over to the dark side.
I'm afraid everything will spill out. Well, that won't take long, but still, it could happen.
Yeah,
it could.
Yeah. Lux Radio Theater.
Yeah. Now, and always keep a little tube of crazy glue so you can just, you know, reseal it.
Yep. And for our Halloween music show, we might even have a little trivia.
Ooh,
yeah, because we're gonna do more than just play songs. We're gonna get movie music in there. Uh-huh. Maybe we'll have guess the movie that this is from.
Oh yeah,
good stuff. Trivia, fun, and facts. Then we got the Edgar Allan
moment.
I got the Edgar Allan Poe night all plotted out. I've got the Halloween party night all plotted out.
Fabulous.
It's the music that's going to take time because I'm going to do things in blocks.
I'm making building blocks.
I, for one, am not a huge pumpkin latte spice fan. I know people go buck wild this time of year when the pumpkin spice is wafting through the air. They just are haunted. They wait outside of their coffee place the crack of dawn, start their day with one of pumpkin latte, pumpkin cappuccino, pumpkin Americano. It's like Forrest Gump. Pumpkin this, pumpkin
yeah.
that, boiled
pumpkin. Sausage, grilled pumpkin stew.
Pumpkin cobbler, pumpkin tart.
You know what is good? The folks who make the Thomas's English muffins make these, make like the cinnamon bread or cinnamon and raisin bread. They make little loaves of it, you know? Well, they also make a pumpkin spice bread. And it's actually quite good. It's actually quite good. It's not a real strong flavor of pumpkin in the bread, but it's
on to the pumpkin bandwagon.
And it's swirly, just like a cinnamon bread, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's got the swirls in it. With your streaks of flavor.
I had the swirls in me once, but boy, it wasn't. It wasn't a pretty sight.
Not. Eat a lot of cheese and hard-boiled eggs. You'll be fine.
Oh, jeez. Okay, fine. There you go.
There we go.
I was going to suggest a probiotic, but what do I know?
A probiotic? Oh, God. Why not? That would have been funnier. might I recommend a probiotic?
I'm going to walk down the aisle. Here's the probiotic aisle right here. This will definitely keep you in a regular state of existence.
Yes. So lots of fun coming up.
I'd have to have a lot more cheese then.
Cheese is good. I love cheese. I can have it on a sandwich. I can have it on a hamburger. I can have it on a cracker.
Sounds like you need to make a sojourn into Wisconsin, cheese mecca.
Actually, Wellington, my little town, was a cheese mecca. It was bigger than Wisconsin at one point, like early 1800s or something. Because this is an old little town.
Well, so Wisconsin got bigger after that, or what?
Yeah, well, they got more well known for
Wellington
cheese. They got more well known for cheese.
Oh, okay.
But we were a big. Oh my gosh, this cat just attacked me, Joey. What is
Did
your
Mighty
deal?
Joe was that Mighty Joe meowing through?
Yes.
The
yeah.
Show?
That was.
Yeah,
yep,
he was yodeling for attention and grabbing my arm and yelling at me.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah. Yeah.
Love me. I think he's slowly trying to overcome his fears because he's been sleeping on the top step now. And I was surprised, though. We took Pal out to the groomer, and he would not. Denise tried luring him upstairs, but he would not come up.
Come
up. He had his chance. The dog was out of the house for like 4 hours. Five hours.
Kitty sensing a spirit, an apparition, a shade, a specter?
No, he's just petrified of the dog. Because the dog gets too hyper. You know what I mean? When he meets people, I have to really restrain him because he's just so excitable and he's a big ape. He doesn't realize what a big ape he is. He almost jerked me right into traffic when we were going home off the leash.
Wow. Is Mighty Joe Young fully armed or declawed?
He is declawed in the front.
If Paladin gets a taste of those back claws, I'm afraid that's going to be a hard lesson, but it may put him to rights to leave Joe alone.
He doesn't get a chance. Joe just finds the deepest, darkest corner and hides. But, yeah, I'm sure he would. I don't think he'd do anything. Paladin got an opossum the other day. It was real early in the morning. He got me up at like 3:30. He was so cute. He started snuggling up to me real soft. And then you hear this, He starts making this little groany sound, And then he's so cute. You can't be mad at him. I'm like, what do you want? He wants to go outside. I figured he had to do his duties. No! He saw an opossum out there, and he went bolting after it, and the thing fell over and played dead. And he's poking it with his paw, like, what did I do? Then it jumped up, and he freaked out, and it ran under the fence and took off. It was hilarious.
Oh,
it was a little baby possum. I'm glad it didn't. They go into two levels of that sleep thing that they do for defense. If they really go under, their body releases this horrible stink, like the stink of a dead animal. It's supposed to help repel, you know, a potential attacker.
Well, I'm glad it was a possum versus a skunk. Otherwise, you'd be shaving that dog and washing for the remainder of the year.
My husky got nailed twice within a week. He was almost orange. He got so much tomato juice on him. We did the tomato juice bath, and it doesn't help a lot. It helps, but not a lot.
I'm of the opinion just you're going to have to shave him right down and just wash the skin as well as you can and just keep shaving.
No, we didn't shave him. We certainly shampooed the heck out of him that week, but a little bit of perfume. Gave him a little bit of perfume. not human perfume, but yeah.
Actually,
it was
there are there are some things. They use them in zoos and other places for animal husbandry. There's some sort of chemical, but it works pretty good to diffuse it when you get hit with a skunk. Odoriferous aroma.
Well,
it's supposed to work better than
all of that is just annoying. I'm really glad it wasn't a raccoon, because a raccoon will fight and they will tear you up. Especially if it's a mama with babies around. Good luck with a raccoon. A human, anything, it'll tear you up. They can be really aggressive.
They can be kind of aggressive. You know, unless you've got a real broom and you know how to, you know, smack them. I don't condone smacking any animal, but if they're in your or near your vicinity of your abode, you know.
Well, if they're attacking you got to do what you got to do. I don't care.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, PETA can come after me, but if I'm being attacked, I'm going to do what I got to do.
Admittedly, at one job, they had a street panda, also known as a raccoon, street panda. They laid humane traps all through the different layers of the parking ramp and have a devil of a time finally catching it.
Yep. We both encountered a mother and babies in a dumpster, and then they came out of the dumpster and we were feeding them crackers and chicken and stuff. Some old food from our kitchen that we weren't going to eat, and the babies were just making these cute little noises and snatching the food. And the mother was about 3 feet away with her. The mother was about
in Canada. What's his name? The Raccoon Whisperer. That's the guy.
Oh my God, that guy's insane. He's like overrun with them.
No,
I've seen him.
Yeah, I caught a video, and there was one time he had over about 30 raccoons.
Yeah, it's insane. Where does he get the money to feed them? You should see it. He's shoveling buckets of food at them.
Yeah, that's dangerous. You know, raccoons are smart. They're very lazy, but they're very smart. That's why they're so lazy.
Yep.
what a stinking mess they make. Oh, man.
I put up a video a few years ago. We had a hummingbird feeder right next to the house. And it kept emptying overnight. We're like, what the hell? So one night we waited up, and sure enough, there's this little baby raccoon, a baby, hanging from it, shaking it, and letting the juice fall on his tummy, and then he's licking his tummy. It was hilarious. And so we open the sliding glass door, and we're talking to it, and he's just looking at us like, what? What? I'm doing this, so?
Yeah.
It was cute as hell.
Have we a problem? Is there an issue? Well,
yeah.
Duh.
Haven't you ever seen anyone lick hummingbird juice off their own tummy before?
Yeah. I mean, you know, get a life, man.
Yeah. We could almost touch him.
Yep. Yep.
Gentlemen, with that said, adieu until next we meet.
That wraps
and,
up this episode of Jungle Larry.
Yes, there you are. And watching our Jungle Larry Master Ceremonies run for the helicopter, abandoning the rest of us to all the critters that are coming out of the woodwork. Help!
And?
Yep.
I guess that means it's time for the great one.
Without further ado, the one, the only, Mr. Durante.
Good night. Hey, that's not how you take a goat's temperature.
It isn't.
And it's time for toodaloo.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Wherever
you are.
Here's the king of the monsters, Boris Karloff, telling you about the Haunted Strangler.
How do you do? Imagine, if you please, a black, moonless night. You're on a street, alone in the darkness. Suddenly, out of the shadows, there is a furtive movement. Another poor soul has met the Haunted Strangler. And you will meet this monstrous madman, too, when you see my new motion picture, The Haunted Strangler. You won't forget him.